Welcome to KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, December 16th of 2022. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we hear about the findings of a 2022 Arctic report card. After that, people are going missing in the Navajo Nation, and a rehab center in Arizona may be responsible. Then we have a story about food banks in Moab, and as always on Friday, a new edition of Sports Talk. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. After that, Connections comes your way this morning. Host Kathy Partridge will be speaking with the author of Why on Earth, Get Smarter, Feel Better, and Heal the Planet. As always, the phone lines will be open and your phone calls are welcome. At 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative, bringing you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. That's all coming up. But first, these headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
As the one-year anniversary of the Marshall Fire approaches, the Boulder County Sheriff's Department released a statement Thursday saying they will likely wrap up their investigation into the fire's cause and release official findings early next year. As part of the update to community members, the Sheriff's Office said investigators, along with the District Attorney's Office, are reviewing significant amounts of documents, photos, and videos in consultation with experts and other state and federal officials. The Sheriff's Office also on Thursday made available on the county's website 60 additional body-worn camera videos made on the day of the fire with footage captured east of Cherryville Road. According to the Sheriff's Department, the department's employees involved with the initial response to the fire and the investigation following it captured 266 body-worn camera recordings and 450 photos. Investigators have also collected 186 items of evidence. The department said it will not release footage west of Cherryville until it announces the final cause and origin of the fire. Workers at a Starbucks store at the 11th Avenue location in Greeley announced this morning they are starting a strike today. The workers say they are joining a nationwide unfair labor practice strike that is demanding Starbucks cease the retaliatory closure of union stores in Colorado Springs and a recent closure of a store in Seattle. Workers also say they are protesting the termination of a fellow union worker. The Boulder City Council unanimously approved Thursday night to annex 48 acres of the Boulder Valley School District's Education Center property at 6500 Arapaho Road. According to the Daily Camera, the annexation will allow BBSD to construct a modular home factory so students can build homes for Habitat for Humanity. City Council also approved an intergovernmental agreement with the school district that tweaks the factory's deliveries to only occur on 65th Street during times when traffic impacts on school district operations and safety risks to students, staff, and community members using the access are low. The agreement also states deliveries to and from 63rd Street will be minimized to the greatest extent possible. After receiving criticism from residents, both BBSD and City Council agreed to changes for delivery locations and also agreed to other requirements to minimize noise and potential impacts to the nearby Sombrero Marsh open space. Several area fire crews and emergency response personnel responded to a building fire at the 400 block of Main Street in Lyons late Thursday morning. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office said response crews were able to evacuate all of the building's occupants, although several people suffered smoke inhalation and minor burns. An ambulance transported one of the occupants to the hospital for further evaluation, while a Sheriff's Office deputy transported himself to the hospital for treatment of minor burns. According to the Sheriff's Office, the fire severely damaged the building, which houses several offices and businesses. The multi-agency fire investigation team is looking into the cause and origin of the fire. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock announced Thursday he has issued an emergency declaration so the city can free up resources to address the needs of migrants that have been arriving in large volumes in recent weeks and without notice. According to Hancock, 247 more migrants have arrived in Denver since Monday, prompting the city to set up two more emergency shelters located within the city's recreation centers. According to Colorado Newsline, the original emergency shelter, which opened December 6, has reached its capacity of 275 people, and the city has spent more than $800,000 on sheltering and reunification efforts. City officials say the migrants are coming to Denver from El Paso, Texas, and have journeyed from Central and South American countries, including Venezuela. During his news conference, Hancock said city officials are pulling employees from multiple agencies and stressed they are working around the clock to support the migrants, while also responding to the needs of Denver's unhoused residents and the existing stressors to the city's shelter system. Hancock requested that anyone who can volunteer or provide shelter space can contact the city's Emergency Operations Center at donations@denvergov.org. The State Health Department says it's monitoring a rise in pediatric hospitalizations caused by the Group A strep bacteria, which the Health Department says can cause many different infections and diseases like pneumonia and sepsis. Since November 1st, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Emerging Infections Program has received reports of 11 Denver-area pediatric cases of the invasive Group A strep. Among the cases, the State Health Department says they are aware of two children dying from Group A strep, although a coroner or medical examiner has not issued an official cause. The last time Colorado had a pediatric death from Group A strep was in 2018. According to health officials, Group A commonly causes sore throat that can easily be treated, and although it's rare, the state is seeing invasive Group A strep causing severe illness. In a Thursday press statement, state epidemiologist Dr. Rachel Hurley said there is no vaccine for Group A strep, but stressed that people and children should keep up to date on vaccines, practice good hand hygiene, and stay home when sick. Because some severe Group A strep infections are occurring in conjunction with respiratory illnesses such as RSV, flu, and COVID-19, health officials are also cautioning that people should call their children's health care provider immediately if their children develop new or worsening symptoms. For today's weather, the National Weather Service says skies will be mostly sunny with highs in the low 30s. Breezy winds will make wind chill values as low as minus 2 degrees. Boulder and Fort Collins may have wind gusts as high as 24 to 41 miles per hour. Tonight's skies will be mostly clear with temperatures in the low teens. The current temperature in Boulder is 18 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You're listening to The Morning Magazine. I'm your host, Alexis Kenyon. For the past 17 years, climate scientists and leaders from across the globe have come together to create what they call an Arctic report card. It's an update about how the region is doing and tracks things like wildfires, major storms, or extreme temperatures. This year, Matthew Druckenmiller, a Boulder-based researcher at the National Snow and Ice Data Center, served as the report's lead author. He presented his findings from this year's report card at the annual Geophysical Union Conference in Chicago this week.
Seasons are shifting in the Arctic, altering ecological and landscape processes, and increasingly misaligning with human expectations.
Druckenmiller told colleagues that their findings this year have forced the team to reevaluate their models.
We updated the climate baseline to calculate departures from what we may call normal. Updating these baselines allows us to essentially calibrate how we assess departures from normal and to establish a new normal to compare to. Understanding change is consistent.
In the last decade, studies show that climate change is warming the Arctic 2 to 3, some say even 4 times faster than the rest of the globe. The past 7 years have been the warmest Arctic temperatures on record. This year's Arctic report card shows that the region's snow season is declining about 20% every decade. John Walsh is the lead author of the Arctic report card's new chapter on precipitation. He says with longer and warmer summers, the Arctic has less ice, more water, and as a result, more precipitation. But in a warming Arctic, this precipitation is turning from what was mostly snow to freezing rain.
In a single event this past December, Fairbanks received over 1.4 inches of freezing rain. In the Arctic, these freezing rain events can be devastating, because the ice layer can persist for months, The ice remains on roads, and it can prevent foraging by wildlife until the spring thaw.
Changes in seasonal ice and warming seawaters are causing domino effects within the Arctic's food chain, starting with microscopic algae, which constitutes the base of the marine food web.
Monitoring changes in marine algae growth is important for understanding how upper levels of the marine food web, including fish, marine mammals, and seabirds, are impacted as well.
Karen Fry is a polar scientist at Clark University in Massachusetts and author of a report on primary productivity of Arctic plankton blooms. Frey says 2022 was the sixth consecutive year that communities and tribal leaders encountered higher than expected numbers of dead seabirds across Alaska coastlines.
The birds were found to be emaciated, which was the most significant factor contributing to these deaths. Seabirds and their eggs are important food for rural Alaska, and residents are concerned about the loss of these subsistence foods.
On top of warming waters and melting ice, food chains are being disrupted by shipping. Matthew Druckenmiller says as quickly as the Arctic is melting, ships from all over the world are plowing new routes through it.
This year's report details how the emergence and availability of satellite-based ship data since 2009 is helping to assess how the opening of the Arctic Ocean is driving more ships into its remote and ecologically sensitive waters.
And as damage to the natural habitat grows, rising temperatures are affecting every part of Inuit life. This year's Arctic report card ends with a chapter from and by Indigenous Alaskans. It's the most comprehensive Indigenous contribution the Arctic report card has included and looks at not just how climate change is affecting Indigenous people, but how Indigenous communities are addressing the change. Jackie Catalina Schaefer directs climate initiatives at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium and is one of the report's authors. Schaefer says Indigenous people have passed down knowledge about the Arctic for more than 20,000 years.
I think if everyone thought like an Inuit, you wouldn't be sad. The world and the world, the place we live in, is constantly changing. People have survived through all these changes for 20,000 years. And then we look at science, which is under 200 years old. There is hope.
As grim as this year's Arctic report card may sound, Schaefer shared this ground's eye view as a member of a directly affected community.
No one really paid attention to the Arctic or listened to the Arctic people for a multitude of reasons. But now I think now what we're seeing is a shift in the dialogue and the narrative. And understanding that even through colonization and the displacement of our people, we still adapted and survived. Now we've mastered the Western world as well. So we have our language, we have our traditional cultural practices. And so now we could share and find new spaces to co-produce knowledge systems so that the future looks different. And that to me is just simply evolution of humanity.
Schaefer says when it comes to the future of the planet, people and cultures are going to have to start working together. The Navajo Nation Police Department has received numerous missing persons reports that they have traced to an addiction treatment center in Arizona. Now they are warning tribal communities about recruiters. For KSUT Tribal Radio, Crystal Ashke has more.
It all started one Monday morning when Navajo Nation Police Sergeant Roland Ash looked at the arrest log after the weekend.
And we usually have a lot of public and talk to arrest, right, on a Monday morning over the weekend. And I noticed that we only had one. And I asked the sergeant, dude, hey, man, what's going on? We only had one arrest over the weekend. What happened? He says, I don't know. I said, you know what? Let's go check.
So Sergeant Dash started asking around and heard about a white van coming into Tuba City, Arizona.
He was asking everybody if they were hungry, if they wanted a place to stay, if they had rehab center, that they were coming out of rehab center out of Phoenix area, and that they needed assistance for rehabilitation from alcohol.
The recruiters have been reported in various areas, like outdoor markets and picking up people on the side of the road, according to a statement published on Facebook by Navajo Nation Police Department on November 17. Soon, families started to report their loved ones missing.
So we started getting calls about missing persons.
Sergeant Dash began looking into different sober homes or group homes after a family member of a missing person told him their brother went to a recovery treatment center in Phoenix, Arizona. Sergeant Dash spoke with the individual over the phone. He explained he willingly went with the recruiters, but the police department's Facebook post from November 17 said some people had experienced difficulty returning to the Navajo Nation. Sergeant Dash says this is an ongoing problem.
Right now, it's a constant thing of these guys showing up here and taking these individuals down.
In a separate Facebook post from October 26, Carol Willetto, a community member, warned people about a couple from Blue Sapphire Group Home showing up at Winter Rock, Arizona's outdoor market and recruiting people. Tribal Radio contacted the Blue Sapphire Group Home about their business and why they were in Winter Rock, Arizona. A woman who identified herself as Justine apologized and said she was not involved because she had no Navajo clients, and then hung up. Sergeant Dash is now working with other law enforcement agencies to investigate any possible criminal activity to ensure the safety of Navajo communities.
I made contact with FBI on this whole thing. I made contact with my superiors on everything that's going on. I provided them with information. I made contact with CI, our criminal investigator here in Tuba City. What's going on here?
The Navajo Nation Police Department is advising community members not to get into vehicles with individuals they do not know, even for a short ride. Sergeant Dash is asking anyone with information to contact the Navajo Nation Police Department or contact the FBI at tips.fbi.gov. For KSUT Tribal Radio, I'm Crystal Ashke.
That story from KSUT Tribal Radio was shared with us via Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a network of public media stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including KGNU. Inflation in this country reached a 40-year high this year, hitting consumer products like gas and groceries. Food banks across the country report a growing demand for food assistance. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Molly Marcello from KZMU reports on one local food pantry serving the Moab community in southeast Utah.
About 20 cars are queued up outside St. Francis Episcopal Church on Cane Creek Boulevard. It's a Friday afternoon, and each vehicle moves steadily to the front of the church, where volunteers are buzzing around.
And right now, Kenyon is getting how many people they're picking up for, and then it goes to our priest, Father Dave, and he's putting grocery bags of food in the back seat or in the back end of the pickup, and then they drive.
That's Phil Irby, who was working this line until I asked him to describe how this weekly food pantry operation works. The church just got more supplies from the Utah Food Bank, so the bags today are pretty full.
Today we have pork roasts and eggs and potatoes and apples and dishwasher detergent, croissants that are frozen and have to be cooked. It's just whatever comes around.
St. Francis has run this pantry for over 3 years now, and Irby says they serve between 800 to 1,000 people a month. The food is meant to help supplement a week's worth of supplies, free up some finances, so locals can use it for other needs, like more groceries, rent, or other things.
There was a lady who came in and she said, I can't afford groceries, but what you're doing is helping us out. And now I'm able to be able to let my kids participate in sports activities so I can pay the fees so that they can do sports.
Dave Sackerson, the priest in charge at St. Francis. People will still know him as Mayor Dave, a position he served in for, as he says, 16 glorious years. But even before his mayoral tenure, Sackerson started out in the grocery business.
I know what things cost and everything else, and I can't believe how much food is right now.
According to the Consumer Price Index, basics like eggs, potatoes, fruit, and veggies have risen well over 10% since last year. Jeanette Bott is the CEO of Utah Food Bank. She told the Public News Service this fall that people are turning to food pantries for the first time in their lives.
Now we're seeing people that are coming to us for need for food who, one, have never asked before, two, have jobs and are pretty stable. And three, the inflation now is the issue that seems to be impacting those families they've never had to help before.
The Utah Food Bank drops supplies to St. Francis every month. Last year, that amounted to 100,000 pounds of food for the pantry. But it's still not enough to run the program week to week.
I've got 75 pounds of hamburger in the back of my truck right now that I just bought today.
Sackerson says they do receive help beyond the Utah Food Bank. They get donations and volunteers from other local faith groups and community organizations. And there's always the oddball giver out there.
It really touches my heart. I mean, some guy walked in here yesterday, slapped a bunch of money in my hand. He says, put it to good use. And I've never seen the guy before in my life. I mean, it's just absolutely phenomenal. I just think people see a need. People see a need. And hopefully we're filling some of that need.
Well, we're a community of 5,000 and we're putting food out for 1,000 people a month.
Phil Irby again. As we speak, the line of cars has thinned out a bit. The big first hour rush is over, but people are still queuing up to grab food bags.
This is a community that has lots and lots of service jobs, cleaning bathrooms and changing sheets and in the back cooking hamburgers and all of that kind of stuff. We're going into the winter when people are getting laid off or getting a half time. So yeah, there's ongoing need for this.
The food pantry at the Episcopal Church of St. Francis is open every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. No questions asked. People can walk, bike, or drive up. If you're hungry, they say, just come. And the Grand County Food Bank is also available locally. That's run through the Southeast Utah Association of Local Governments on Tuesdays and Thursdays. For KZMU News, I'm Molly Marcello.
During the holidays, people line up out the door to have their kid sit on Santa's lap so he can ask them what he wants for Christmas. But how about this holidays? We ask Santa what he wants for Christmas. Never thought about that? Hello and welcome back to the best sports show on KGNU, Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am here, your host, Jimmy Searfoss, coming at you with the best sports news and stories from across the Front Range. One of the biggest stories from Colorado comes out of Golden, Colorado, where the School of Mines football team has put together a historic run to the Division II NCAA National Championship. The Ore Diggers actually opened up this season with back-to-back losses. They took L's to Grand Valley State and Angelo State early on in the season, and then went on a 9-game win streak where they have straight-up dominated the competition. There's been some ridiculous scores. They beat up on Adams State 84-10. They demolished Chadron State 45-9. And they destroyed Fort Lewis on Veterans Day 80-0. They took that streak into the NCAA Division II playoffs where they rattled off four straight wins, including a revenge win against Angelo State. And now they are getting set to play in the school's first ever national championship against Ferris State. It is the second ever meeting between the two schools. Their first was back in 2016, where Mines actually lost 38-17. They will be turning to senior quarterback John Matoka to lead their dominant high-scoring offense against the Bulldogs. Matoka is one of four Division II AP All-Americans. Matoka and Matt Armendariz was named to the first All-American team, while wide receiver Mac McLeod and Mason Pierce were named to the second team. The game will be held in Texas at McKinney ISD Stadium. I know what you're thinking. It's a high school stadium. But do not get it twisted. High school football is no joke in the state of Texas. This stadium costs nearly $70 million to make, and it seats around 12,000 people. And I'm hoping that all of those seats get filled by School of Mines students, because that Ore Digger crowd has been a crazy one. They have been packing their home field of Alumni Field at Marv K Stadium for their 13-game win streak, and they've actually had some pretty creative chants. One of my favorite goes, that's okay, we're going to be your boss one day. The fans have also been alongside Blaster the Donkey, who is their live mascot and has watched over their team on their trip to the championship. For fans that cannot attend the game but want to watch, it is this Saturday, the 17th, on ESPNU and ESPN Plus at 11 Mountain Time. Again, that is Saturday the 17th on ESPNU and ESPN Plus at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. Do not miss history. This is the first time they have ever been in the national championship, and they're going to need your support. That is all the time I've got for you today. Make sure you tune in and cheer on the Ore Diggers. I actually will be taking some time off to head down to Texas and spend some time with my family for the holidays, but don't worry, I'll be right back here on KGNU in the new year. I hope everyone has a happy holidays. Thank you guys for tuning in over the last year. I cannot thank you guys enough. And for the last time in 2022, this has been Jimmy Searfoss hosting Sports Talk here on KGNU.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Alexis Kenyon. Thank you to Stacey Johnson, Shannon Young, and Jimmy Searfoss for their help with today's program. Up next, it's Connections with host Kathy Partridge. That's after these news headlines from the BBC.